Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, November 2nd, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headline, Sunday Spotlight, A Beacon of Light, by Luke Taylor. Greater Community AIDS Project of East Central Illinois marks 40 years of providing support. 40 years ago, when the Greater Community AIDS Project of East Central Illinois was founded, AIDS was considered a death sentence. Today, that isn't the case. But GCAP is still active, providing resources and support for people who have been diagnosed with HIV. Founding chairperson Jerry Carden remembers what it was like waiting for the, quote, the gay cancer, unquote, or, quote, gay-related immune deficiency, unquote, its original official name, to reach the Midwest after cases began to be reported in larger coastal cities. We kind of did the ignoring thing, you know. Don't even think about it. It won't happen. They'll get it under control, Carden said. But then, by 83 and 84, we began to have cases of people that we knew. People wanted to help, to be prepared as much as possible, to support the local community as the epidemic spread. Even in the earliest days, organizers worked out a multi-pronged approach with volunteers focusing on their strengths in either support services or education. They began meeting at the McKinley Memorial Presbyterian Church, often using a meeting room in what is now the McKinley Foundation's cafe. We bantered back and forth on how do we do this, and one of the issues for us was that people like myself, pretty much all of us, thought I could be infected unless if I'd been celibate and not putting myself at risk, Carden said. We were just nervous, and we were also a bunch of gay men that had many times been shunned from our own families or friends, maybe lost jobs because of people finding out. It was a whole different era. Carden said that McKinley played an important role in founding the organization by offering a place to gather as a church that supported gay and lesbian groups even back before the LGBTQ acronym was coined. If McKinley was GCAP's birthplace, Pastor Charlie Schweitzer could be considered his father, Carden said, for his help in focusing and guiding the founding members even when they argued with each other and were disorganized at times. Carden said that he started out on the board because not many people were interested and ended up not taking on a second term and just focusing on volunteering after that. GCAP became the only organization in Illinois, outside of Chicago, working to support people with HIV and AIDS. GCAP opened a phone line to people who were diagnosed with HIV to ask questions and seek support. But it was a support system for anybody connected to someone who had been diagnosed, whether family members or partners or friends. Some callers just needed someone to talk to understand their risks and what they should do if they were at risk of getting infected or infecting others. GCAP hosted fundraisers such as variety shows and Artists Against AIDS art sales to keep their work going and spread pamphlets with education on safe sex for both gay and straight interactions. The organization was originally called the Gay Community AIDS Project, but shifted that first G to Greater around 1995 to recognize how the diagnosis doesn't only affect gay individuals. Some argued that it was important to highlight the gay community in the name, Carden said, because they received so much negative press around the time the organization was founded. Just a few years before that, in 1993, GCAP opened the Champagne House, which is still a major part of the organization's work. It provides transitional housing for people with HIV or AIDS who need somewhere to stay while they get on their feet. When we work with people with HIV and AIDS, we see that you're more likely to be homeless and more likely to become homeless, said current GCAP Executive Director Daria Shanghaibi. The reverse is true too, she said. People who are homeless are at greater risk of contracting HIV or AIDS. Housing is prevention. Housing is treatment. They're able to access their medication when they have housing, and if they're not worrying about where to put their head at night, they're more likely to be able to go to their doctor's appointments, Shanghaibi said. The inability to access medical care and medication is a direct result of housing instability. Shanghaibi highlighted how, since GCAP was founded, medical advancements have changed everything for people with HIV or AIDS. However, those medical advancements have created treatments that require consistency and thus some level of stability to maintain. Even after 40 years, she said, progress made by activists surrounding HIV and AIDS has taken a step back due to shifts in federal and state funding that threaten medical services necessary to organizations like GCAP. If we're not able to get our grants, we're unable to help our clients. When we're having to provide all these reasonings for providing our clients with the basic care that they need, it threatens our ability to rapidly help a client who is needing urgent medical care, Shanghaibi said. Currently, we have a regional lack of affordable, stable, and permanent housing. And every service provider in the area knows this. This is our greatest obstacle. Because we can't solve an epidemic when our clients have nowhere to lay their heads at night. When people who would benefit from GCAP's assistance aren't able to, it isn't for a lack of trying. The Champagne House has space for a few clients, but Shanghaibi said she and other board members and volunteers are out all the time driving folks around, coordinating on other places to stay, or providing a few items to help out in an emergency. We do this thing where when we get food for them, we don't just get healthy food, because people love little snacks, Shanghaibi said. People are always surprised by it. That emotional and physical support can go a long way for people like Devonte Harris, who stayed at the Champagne House and moved out in August. He'd been struggling to find a place to live, especially with limited time slots to get into apartments in a college town, and ended up being offered a spot at the house, which was right near his previous residence. GCAP is hush-hush, like they want to respect people's privacy. It's not like there's a big brand name outside on the front door, Harris said. You can drive past the house and never know it's there. While staying there, Harris said every resident had regular check-ins with a case management worker who could help out with any needs they had, including supporting their mental health. There was also a retired medical professional around to help understand lab results and how to proceed when pursuing medical care. Living with the other folks in the Champagne House wasn't too different from living with a family, Harris said. They all tried to support each other as they could, but often just did their own things. Many of the residents would even cook and eat together at the end of each day. For Harris, staying in the house was time to save money and get more stable, as well as connect with other people in similar situations to his own. Some were older, having lived through situations with HIV and AIDS that Harris said he couldn't even imagine. It's like a beacon of light, or just refreshing to see that with you being this old and still living through it, your life is fine. You just got in a messed up predicament, or you just have to move into the house just like anybody else, really, Harris said. For him, learning he had HIV did feel like a death sentence at first. He remembers getting home, closing the door, and breaking down. And then 6 months later, he was on medication that meant he would never have to worry about symptoms or transmission as long as he keeps up with it. It's a transition to, okay, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to let this dictate how you move around in life, or are you going to go ahead and keep moving forward, Harris said. It's hard. Will it be the last day of your life? Not at all. Continuing inside the front page, we have Top of the Morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. If you want to know how much Millie Roseman meant to the Gifford State Bank, the decision by its board of directors after her death made it crystal clear. On Tuesday, the bank closed its locations at 2 p.m. to honor and recognize the unwavering dedication and leadership Millie provided. The unusual move ensured that countless coworkers and customers of Millie's could attend that afternoon's visitation at the popular Rantoul Banquet Center she owned, the Linden. I felt it was the right thing to do in her memory, Bank President Tony McLean said. It wasn't a hard decision at all. Last year, we wrote of Millie's devotion to the bank, which the Gifford native was a part of for a remarkable 73 years, and still had a standing invite to sit in on any board meetings. Stories flowed at the visitation, many about how someone got their start in business because of Millie, McLean said. She was the kind of person you strive to be as a community banker. That was evident by the long lines Tuesday. People telling me how she gave them their first car loan 50 years ago, daughter-in-law Colleen Roseman said. She always was that banker everyone went to see. One of Millie's five children, Vicki Wilson, manages the Linden. She said Millie, who died October 21, was making business decisions till the end, calling from her hospital bed to see how she could help. Just a wonderful mother, she said, and a wonderful employer. And in history, area history in 1925, rockets burst overhead, red flares sputtered and fumed, cheers, howls, and whoops of hilarious thousands rent the air, and on the shoulders of a group of laughing and shrieking Indians was born a redhead, tousled but happy. Red Grange had come home. The Twin Cities, students and townsfolk alike, were there to greet him, and not only were there, but waited 2 hours in the cold on the Illinois Central Station platform for the overdue special to bring their hero home. In 1975, after deliberating for 5 hours, a jury of five men and seven women found Fighting Illini fullback Kelvin Washington innocent of a rape charge in Champaign County Circuit Court. The trial revolved around the assailant's identification. Richard Watson, Washington's attorney, said the first time the victim positively identified Washington was in the courtroom when asked if her assailant was present. When initially shown Washington's picture, the 30-year-old plaintiff stated that it was similar to her attacker. However, she was unable to positively identify him in a lineup that contained other Black Illini football players. In 2010, the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign ranks first in the nation for with regard to recipients of the Fulbright Scholars Awards, according to a report by the Chronicle of Higher Education. Eight faculty from the campus were awarded Fulbrights in the current grant cycle. In addition, according to the Institute of International Education, 15 Illinois students were awarded Fulbright grants in 2010, placing the campus in the top five among all public universities. And continuing on the front page with Kathy's mailbag. Have you heard anything about the city of Urbana reducing North Lincoln Avenue from Killarney to Washer Drive from 4 lanes to 2 lanes with a middle turn lane and 2 bike lanes? Assistant City Engineer Justin Swinford told me the city is in the preliminary design phase of the Lincoln Avenue Washer to Killarney Improvements Project, which will provide safety improvements for vehicles, bicycles, and pedestrians along this corridor. He said plans include a roadway reconfiguration to a single lane in each direction with a shared left turn lane. The project also will include improved facilities for bicycles, but whether that is in the form of on-street bike lanes or a shared-use path is yet to be determined, he said. Principal planner Kevin Garcia said this type of reconfiguration is common throughout the country, with plenty of local examples, including Main Street through downtown Urbana and Philo Road south of Florida Avenue. They're commonly referred to as road diets, and despite that being a terrible name, I mean, who can really get excited about a diet? They're very effective at making streets safer for all users without, your reader may be pleased to learn, making traffic worse, Garcia said. The key is the middle turn lane, which gets turning cars out of the way while the traffic goes safely by. Readers may learn more about the proposed Lincoln Avenue project in Urbana's capital improvement plan, available on the city website. And for anyone who'd like to know more about the proposed reconfiguration, Garcia says the Federal Highway Administration, FHWA, has a nice, succinct page about the benefits of such roadway reconfigurations. I refuse to say road diet. Next question is, are hold times longer for popular items since the Champaign Public Library abolished overdue fees? Do they follow up with patrons whose items are overdue? The answer is, like many libraries around the country, CPL stopped charging overdue fines in 2020. The idea was to remove an economic barrier to use of public library materials. To encourage timely returns, customers receive a series of reminders, starting with a pre-overdue notice and followed by 3 overdue notices, said Tricia Duzan, CPL's deputy director. This process usually leads to any late items being returned. We monitor holds lists, including for items that are overdue. Our goal is to ensure wait times are reasonable, and we will order additional copies to meet demand as needed. The CPL website says items will automatically renew up to 10 times as long as no one else is waiting for them, and accidents do happen. If an item you have checked out is lost or damaged, you will be charged for it. Customers who have questions about holds or wait times are invited to contact the library at 217-403-2000 or via email at info@champaign.org. Next question. What are the regulations pertaining to farmers plowing fields and spraying herbicides and pesticides on windy days when the dust and chemicals can blow over roads and into nearby neighborhoods? Is there any recourse for neighbors affected by these operations? The answer is, the Illinois Department of Agriculture regulates use of pesticides, and its website says commercial and public applicators must be licensed to use any pesticides. Farmers and homeowners must be licensed to apply restricted use pesticides. The department's website says proper pesticide use begins before application with reading the product's label. Some label directions specify the maximum wind speed for application. Others simply indicate the product should not be used when weather conditions favor drift. Strong winds blowing pesticides onto surrounding properties result in the largest number of complaints. so care should be taken to apply when winds are light and directed away from sensitive vegetation. Other precautions include leaving a buffer strip, increasing droplet size, lowering spray pressure, and using a drift control additive. Finally, keep accurate, detailed records, including wind speed and direction during application, to avoid frivolous complaints. IDOA spokesman Lori Harlan said, "While there is no legislation that sets climate, air, or water parameters for tillage, the Illinois Pesticide Act regulates the use of pesticides, and the Illinois Department of Agriculture investigates misuse complaints. Our website has a form for submitting complaints online. The instructions for the complaint form note that the form must be received by the department within 30 days of the incident or within 30 days of when the damage associated with the incident was first noticed, pursuant to 8 IAC 250.200. Complaints received by the department after this 30-day period will be kept on file at the department, but no investigation or administrative action will be pursued." And next one is, "I'm noticing some new mail delivery trucks on routes around Savoy. Are they hybrids? Until recently, I could always hear my mail carrier's truck from a block away." The answer is, the new postal delivery trucks with the oversized windshields are NGDVs, Next Generation Delivery Vehicles, made by the Oshkosh Corporation's Oshkosh Defense Unit. NGDVs are replacing the U.S. Postal Service's boxy long life vehicles, LLVs, which have been in service for more than 30 years. A Postal Service press release says, "Engine technology has evolved considerably in that time, which is why our newer vehicles don't have the distinctive sound that many associate with the LLV. And here I thought they all just had bad mufflers." The Postal Service is 1 year into its planned 5-year LLV replacement cycle across the nation. USPS spokesperson Susan Wright was unable to tell me exactly how many of the new NGDVs are in service in our area or which communities they serve. But she said to date, some 4,000 new modern vehicles are operating in Illinois, all part of the total delivery fleet of nearly 11,000 vehicles in the state. Other types of newer vehicles also are being used on some mail routes around the area. Many of the new NGDVs across the country are zero-emission electric vehicles, though I understand from a local postal staffer that all of the NGDVs in use here have internal combustion engines because of our harsh Midwest winters. The new NGDVs have greater cargo capacity than the LLVs, which enables more packages to be transported per trip. They also are expected to be more reliable mechanically. An October 2024 release about the NGDV said, "These vehicles have been designed with employee safety and comfort in mind, ensuring a better working environment for the Postal Service's dedicated letter carriers. Features such as improved visibility, ergonomic seating, air conditioning, safety improvements, and user-friendly operations will give Postal Service employees a more comfortable and intuitive experience while performing their duties." And the next question, "In Spalding Park, across from Franklin STEAM Academy, there's a partially completed baseball diamond, just the infield, next to a full-sized baseball field. Why was it built, and is it used? Franklin's physical education classes use the infield for kickball, according to Stacy Moore, Chief Communications Officer for Champaign Unit 4 Schools. Our baseball team has used it for practice if Edison has a game. They also use it to warm up before games. The softball team hasn't used the field because they use the Central High School facility," Moore said. Brett Johnson, Director of Operations and Planning for the Champaign Park District, tells us the infield property is owned by the Park District, but leased to Unit 4, through a ground lease agreement. Unit 4 is solely responsible for the operation and maintenance of the athletic facilities in Spalding Park, which includes the baseball infield. Prior to Unit 4's construction of the new baseball fields and locker restroom concession building, an intergovernmental agreement was developed between the two entities for the use and improvement of Spalding Park. When the park's tennis courts were reconstructed a few years ago, a separate intergovernment agreement was executed for those. Responsibilities for both parties are spelled out in those documents. Sarah Sandquist, CPD's executive director, adds that the area beyond the Sparian Field, what would ordinarily be the outfield, drops substantially into a drainage swale. Thus, the infield was never intended to be used as anything other than a practice field. The next one is, love the Unity Rockets flags atop the Savoy McDonald's. Is there a particular connection between the Savoy store staff and the Unity Rockets? Blake Linders, owner-franchisee of Linders Family McDonald's, said the flags really just came about as our first customers were a bunch of Rocket High School kids who came in all excited when we opened, and we put their picture up in the store as our first customers, and it ballooned from there. We get a lot of Rocket students every day, and someone asked about putting up a flag, and we said yes. Next question is, I see these sharp-looking Fighting Illini backpacks around campus. Are they available only to student athletes, or can I buy one to give as a Christmas gift? The answer is, U of I athletic spokesperson Derek Burson said, the Fighting Illini Nike Utility Speed Backpack is available for purchase at Game Day Spirit. And the next question was, a sign at Market View Shopping Center says a Bob's Discount Furniture is coming soon. When? The answer is, Jana Wiersema wrote about the new Bob's in August. Spokesperson Haley Garvin said, the grand opening is still expected to take place in the winter of 2026 at 63 Market View Drive in Champaign. That's the former location of a Dick's House of Sport and a long-ago Bed Bath & Beyond. Bob's Discount Furniture is based in Connecticut, and its website shows the chain has more than 200 locations across 26 states. Its Joliet location is the nearest one to see you at this time. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, November 2nd, 2025. Please stay tuned.